Thank you all for coming. It's obviously a busy time of the year, but I guess this is important preparation also. Today's shiur is sponsored by Mr. Aaron Schwartz, Le'ilui Nishmas, his father, Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yisrael HaKohen. That also happens to be my great-grandfather, so the neshama should have an aliyah. And a pretty appropriate shiur, talk about sponsoring for our father, great-grandfather. Today's shiur is entitled The Magnificent Minhagim of Pesach and the Seder. And if you think back, people who were zocha to be by Sedarim, including earlier generations, you know, the minhagim that our families had by Sedarim are really passed on through the ages. I remember listening to one of these presentations by Rabbi Mechanic, who's involved in Esha Torah or Project Inspire, and the way he defined Judaism is, okay, the Jews left Egypt, relatively speaking, not so long ago, the year 2448. So basically, 2,500 years ago, they left. But it's not so far really to go back, because if you think of the idea that a person sits by a Pesach Seder with his, many times with a grandparent, and that grandparent reached, was by a Seder with their grandparent, it's only less than a couple dozen Sedarim to go from now all the way back to Yetzias Mitzrayim. A Seder is really something which spans generations, and the Minhagim, which are seen at a Seder, are Minhagim which could be last for generations. I remember this is the way my grandfather did it, and that's something that has real, you know, substance, something that really, when you see it by an earlier generation, it's very meaningful to a person. You pass those on. I found an amazing thing. There's a website called chinuch.org. It's a classic resource for rebbeim. You want to prepare a sheet teaching Perek HaMafkid. You know, I believe a lot of the elementary school, maybe some high school rebbeim, sifta rebbeim, utilize it. Not usually there. But I decided to look it up for about Pesach. I found one rebbe made an amazing thing. He made a list, a questionnaire. The point of the questionnaire was to see, to gauge the kid's knowledge of family minhagim. And it was probably a project that a kid was supposed to go home and ask his parents, okay, what's our minute for this and that? Fortunately, it could be in today's world, they'll tell you just have one answer for all of them, see art scroll. Or others might say, it depends on where we're going for the pace, which hotel will you go for the Pesach Seder. But this list had 108 questions. 108 different aspects of Minhagim going through the Pesach Seder. Now, I did go through not all of them, but some of them. I think the writer did run up the number a little bit because some of the things were not limited really to Pesach. Do you stand or sit for Kiddush? Really, that's something that comes about all year round. There is significance to do by Pesach because all year round you may not have your grandfather there making Kiddush. On Pesach, you do. But he had 108 different aspects going through the whole Pesach. Not just the Seder, but, you know, the days of Pesach. When do you stop eating matzah before Pesach? It's a question of minhagim. So there really are a lot of minhagim that involve the holiday of Pesach and the Seder. Obviously, we're not going to get to all 108 today. I'm not sure we're going to make a dent, but we'll start. I saw an interesting, I guess you call it a vart, from Chaim Brisker. You know that really what we do at the Seder is to try to visualize everything that happened to our ancestors when they left Mitzrayim. And there are so many things which are zecher the freedom, something zecher the shibud. Really, that itself, sort of the contradiction, is one of the things that the children are supposed to notice and ask. The stira in the manashtana, which according to some mafarshim is the main point of the question. So somebody once asked Rav Chaim Brisker, how come, you know, we celebrate so many things about Yetzias Mitzrayim? What about the Achrei Chein Yotzu Berechush Gadol? Afterwards, the Bnei Yisrael left the Mitzrayim with big wealth. So some say, well, you're supposed to have nice kale mat of seder, so that's part of showing Cheres. So Chaim Brisker had a sharp answer. He said, what we're representing in the seder are what changed in the Jewish people. They used to be Meshubat to Paro, they're no longer. Now only Meshubat Hashem. So things that last, we represent by the Seder. Achrei Chein Yotzu Berechush Gadol didn't last. So thus we don't have it. Cute line. But really everything we have at the Seder has a meaning, has a purpose. So I'd like to begin today with, was mentioned before, probably the most symbolic item, which is not food, at a Seder is a Seder plate. Right? If you probably Google Seder plate, you talk about an image of what a Seder plate looks like. There are so many different versions of Seder plates. It's nice modern art. You could have also as an heirloom passed on through generations. What does a Seder plate look like? So if you look on your sheets, there are three versions in halacha. There's a version of the Ramah, the Gra, and the Arizal. Now I found this diagram. This diagram put it together sort of as a square. Now, most people aren't square. Most Seder plates are more round. But the point is to visualize what's on the Seder plate, where it's put. Now, if you look at these charts, you'll notice some differences. There are quite a few differences between the Ramah, the Gra, and the Arizal. And probably interesting, if I ask people here, which Seder plate do they have? What items are on the Seder plate? What order are they on? Not sure if anyone realized, you're usually picking sides. So let's first go through the Shulchan Aruch, and then I'll show you the differences between them and what they're all about. The Shulchan Aruch, it's in the middle of the sheet, Simen Tov Ayin Gimel. Says, Mevim Lefnei Baal Abayis Kara. They bring in front of the Baal Abayis, and we'll talk about this aspect, why it says specifically the Baal Abayis, a little later. Sheyesh Bo Shalosh Matzos. You bring in front of him a plate which has three matzos, Maror, the Charoses. It has Maror, your bitter herbs, it has Charoses, your nice red mixture, the Karpas, and it has Karpas. Ol Yerek Acher, or a different vegetable. Karpas is the name of a vegetable. What it means is a good minhag hak. The Chometz Omei Melech, and vinegar or salt water. Somehow salt water became the winner. Ushnei Tavshilin, two cooked foods. Acher Zecher LePesach, the Echad Zecher LeChagiga. One for the Pesach, and one for the Karban Chagiga. We have, the minog is to have meat and an egg. Hagah, here's the Ramah adding, V'yesader hakar lefanov, how should you arrange this plate? The Beis Yosef, the Mechaber, doesn't tell us, does he have a plate with all these items? How do you organize them? So the Ramah writes, B'inyon shein tzorech laver al mitzvah. The main reasoning of how you organize it is you shouldn't pass anything over. Right? I'm waiting for the joke. But there's an iser to pass over all year round. You can't, if there's a mitzvah in front of you, it happens all, you know, just yesterday we had three Sifrei Torah. That's the type of things which could get tricky. If I start taking out one Sefer Torah and it's the wrong Sefer Torah, it gets into issues of ein ma'avir ma'al mitzvos. You can't pass up a mitzvah once you sort of come in contact with it. So the Rama says that's his philosophy for how to organize what's the order in the plate. Dahainu akarpas yilamayla minakol. The karpas should be above or closer to you than anything else. And the vinegar or the salt water next to it, yosem in a matzah, v'amatzas min a maror. The matzah should be closer than the maror. V'charoses together with the charoses, then you yozakrov meilav min a basar adam. Right, the Rama makes it. One second, the Rama makes it very practical for what you're going to take. Right in front of you, what comes up first in the seder? The karpas. With the salt water. That comes first. After that, depending how long you talk, you'll get to the matzah. After that, you get to the maror with the charoses. And the zroah and the be'ah, that you're sort of getting to last, or practically not really getting to. Those are zechers. So that's the Rama's strategy of how to arrange this kara. Now, if you look at the Gra is exactly the opposite. Where the Rama said you should have, first of all, there are probably three distinctions different in the Gra than what the Rama has. The Gra has a Zra and the Be'a in front, not in the back. Why? In the Rama's version, those are all the way in the back. You didn't get to those last. They're not even. There you have it in the front. He also doesn't have anything. There's no karpas there. There's no karpas. And there's no salt water. He left those out. And also, the Rama had three matzos. That's what Mechaber himself said. You have three matzos. The Gra only has two. What's pshat? Don't just tell me the Gra was, you know, he didn't have as much money, so he had to get a smaller plate. Could only fit a few things in. So, you know, someone had to be voted off the island. So no karpas, no meimelach. That's the Gra. I just want to show first the distinctions, and then we'll explain. And then you have the Arizal. The Arizal, there's two versions really of the Arizal. This is, I believe, the main version. But depending, I'm not sure all these modern art plate designers know all these shitas and exactly how to do it. I'm not sure how these things evolved. You know, I'm not sure they're sitting here with my halacha sheet, you know, trying to. As we said before, most Seder plates are made in a circle. And a lot of them, the maror sort of is on the top. That will make the most sense if you want to make a circle. But really, that Arizal's idea is three, if you can visualize nekudos, three segels, or two segels, right? The three dots. Okay, Mickey Mouse ears, okay? Is that better? Whatever, the three dots, one in the bottom, two on top, having two sets of those, one on top of the other. That's really what this Arizal is saying. Some flip Mickey's head on the other one, that Mickey's head should be on top of his ears for the top one.
Wait, the triangle, is that really Arizal or is that Rubal?
No, this is really Arizal. It's brought down, I tracked it down in Halacha, the Bir Hatif, which is on the side of any Mishabrua, brings down this Arizal. And all the mysticism behind his idea. But if you look in the Arizal has seemingly the biggest plate. He has six items on the plate. Zro and the Be'ah. He has maror. He has charoses karpas. And he also has chazeres. What's chazeres? Another form of maror. So the Arizal is into two types of marors, one to call maror, one to call chazeres. Also, if you notice, so chazeres is one difference which does not appear in any of the other plates. You also have, he doesn't have the salt water, the meimela, that the Ramah had. According to the Arizal, the salt water is not put on the Seder plate. And you don't have the matzos either. What happened to the matzos? So you're going to tell me the kid stole it. But he's only really supposed to steal half of one. So the matzos are in the Arizal either underneath, or really some people, nowadays it is quite fashionable, you get one of these big expensive ones, you know, have the kara on top with the three-tiered matzah holder underneath. That's a nice thing that would fit with Arizal. But I saw others, if Shlomo Zalman spells this out, you don't have to have one big set with them on top. You could even have your matzah alongside it. It's supposed to be near it. But those are three versions. You have the Ramah, you have the Gra, the Arizal. My unscientific survey is most people, most Seder plates sold in Judaica stores, go with Arizal. That is by far the most common form of a Seder plate. And for most people, it could just be because that's what they sell in the store. That's what they have. Others, and this is probably a primary, pretty major reason, is I meant to point this out a couple weeks ago when we did that share on the Vosner, the Hasidic Posek. I remember in Yeshiva, Rabbi Neumann Zatzal, I used to say this a lot. Most of our families today, if we're still Jewish, a lot of us must trace our roots. We must have some chassid, some Hasidic lineage in our family, because a lot of the people who were not subscribed to Hasidic sect in Europe, unfortunately, went the other way. And really, the Hasidic world did have a tremendous, tremendous impact in Judaism today. So even if we ourselves don't identify as Hasidic, but if you go back a few generations, many, many people will have some Hasidic remnants. Not everybody. But many. Okay. Right. If you're Sephardi, then probably not. But within the Ashkenazic world, a significant amount really do have some lineage dating back to a Hasidic. And Mamelo, what that means is, especially when it comes to Peso, it comes to Zedarim, many people will follow their great grandfathers. If the great grandfather was Hasidic, even though if you're three generations away from that, but those minhagim still last. So I think that's a tribute why a lot of the Seder plates do go after the Arizal. What I would like to do is explain a little bit why do we have these differences? What are these differences based on? Now you'll say, okay, what difference does it make? A Seder plate is a big deal. Especially if you put in the context of this is something that, as Hashem, you want your kids, your grandkids, to remember the way you did things. So of all the nights of the year, to be medaktik, to be careful how we do things, it's not a Pesach. You know, that's the night, sort of, they'll take a snapshot of what religious life is in our family. So we want to do things at the Seder as best as we can. So it matters exactly where you put things, what a Seder plate looks like. Also, just how you see from the poskim how they treat the Seder plate. You know, there's a debate, we'll get to in a moment, when does the Seder plate come onto the table? But there's equally a debate, when is it taken away? So there are those that say, okay, once you use the things in the Seder plate, okay, you can take it away, cast it away. There are others, the Kaf HaChaim amongst them, says, no, no, the Seder plate's got to be there the entire time. I believe they even spelled out that there should always be something left on the Seder plate of that object. So even if you're going to use the maror from the Seder plate, but you should leave some of it there. So there should always be that item on the Seder plate, part of it there through the entire Seder. You know, it's for usage, but it's also for a show of what a Seder is about. You know, it's an amazing thing. We're performing a Seder, and we have this plate, which is sort of to demonstrate all the different things we're going to do by the Seder, or what we're remembering by the Seder. So even things after we finish it, that plate should still be on the table, and that plate should still have remnants of what was in there before. Now, how do we explain these differences? Let's start by the Ramah. The Ramah came about with a very clear logic. Why do I make my order my way? Because there's a concept of ein mavir na mitzvos. One is not allowed to bypass mitzvos. So that means you should have the thing closest to you that's going to come first. Now, even according to the way I just said it, that you'll keep things on the Seder plate even after they're finished. It's not called, you know, after I have, let's say, my karpas, there's no problem of me stepping over that, reaching over that to get my matzah because I already finished the karpas. Eim avir la mitzvos is an issue. I can't bypass one mitzvah before I didn't do karpas yet, so I can't bypass that to do matzah or pass it to do something else. But the Ramah's idea should be the most basic. Shouldn't we have karpas and salt water there first on the bottom? Because I'm going to do that first. Why is it that the Gra and the Rizal, both of them, ignore that? Yes?
I think logically this Roma should be the first thing because this one based on Vikash, the Korban was shed in the day on the 14th, so it was the first thing.
Interesting.
Even though you didn't eat it later till the meal. But interesting. It was the first thing that you did.
That's a very interesting idea. You're proposing that the Zerah should be there first because that really came on the 14th, before the rest of the Seder. Right? Also, that's more Chashuv. So that perhaps could be part of the reasoning of the Gra, perhaps. But what does he do with the fact of Eim Avir and Al Mitzvos? I am still passing over that to get to, you know, my, let's say, in the Arizals. I'm passing over my maror to get to my karpas. So how do you explain that? So there is a mishabura. I did not put this on your sheets. But it's a mishabura over here, sifkat and chavav. So the mishabura writes, it might be along the lines of what you tried to offer. He says, "Yeshakasvu she'in lahakbet al basu beya imitzurach l'dal galayim." You don't have to worry if I'm passing over the egg and the meat. Why? Kiva she'in a mitzvah el zecher ba'alma. Because practically, I'm not doing a mitzvah with them. We don't have a base of mikdash, so I can't bring a karban pesach. So they're there for show; they're not there for a mitzvah. If I'm going to do a mitzvah with them, so I have no right to pass over one to do another. But since it's only a zecher, that's okay. Okay, it might explain the Gra. But what about in, let's say, the Arizal, the Maror is on the bottom, Zeres is on the bottom. Why do we allow that? You're passing over that for the matzah. So the Mishbura writes, "V'gamo Maror v'charoses efshad lo shayach im avirin." It could be by maror, also, it's not shayach im avir. He doesn't explain himself. I saw some come to explain that could be maror, stam is a different thing, because Granted, that is a mitzvah performing. It's not just a zecher ba'alma, but it's a different type of mitzvah. It's a mitzvah where we're supposed to have tzar, some degree, whether, you know, I have to be careful how I say it, because not every maror people eat actually brings about tzar. But it's to remember the Sheba and that. So some explain that's not a violation of the Maviran if you pass over something like that. You're allowed to. Yes?
Perhaps in my parents, it's not again there because one is Matzah, the rice, and the other is the Rabban, and the Vela, and the rice should come first.
Oh. So that would work, perhaps, right?
That would work for the Grun Rabban. You put Matzah before the. It doesn't explain the
right. It wouldn't explain, let's say, the Arizal necessarily. But you're right. There are some, you maybe could start making chalukim, some are deraisa, some derabanans. So matzah might be more deraisa, more might be more derabanan. But it's tricky. I saw a few different answers people tried. But the Mishabura brings this answer that the Zroah and the Be'ah is just a zecher, so that's not a problem of Emavirin. And by Marer also, he says, there's no problem in Maverin. You're right, he doesn't spell that out, the reason. Maybe it's because it's Drabanan, but not so simple. Now, what about the fact, this funny matzah business? The Machaber says you're supposed to have three matzahs there. The Gra decides, no, two matzahs. And really, when I say two matzahs, that's really not true either. The Gra's two matzahs that he holds you're supposed to have there is one shalem and the one broken one. The Gra says, by yachatz, when you break the middle matzah and one part is given away for afikomen, the other part you keep, that together with one shalem, that you have on the table by your Seder plate, but not three. So where does he get that from? The Machaber clearly says he's supposed to have three. Arizal goes with three. Where does the Grug get two?
Is that a bigger problem on a year like this year when the first night is Friday night, so now you don't have like a Mishnah that you make here?
Ooh, very interesting point.
What's that different than that, if any of them?
So you could... So I found in the Grug... It's, the Gruz spells this out in his parish over there in Shulchan Aruch that really dates back to Machlokas Rishonim. The Gruz sides with the Rambam, and the reasoning is that it's mentioned in the Gemara, different things, that your Haggadah is supposed to be on the... You're telling over the Haggadah, it says a lashon of matzah. Right? I forgot the exact lashon of Chazal. Lachem sha'onim lov dvarim harbe. Right? The bread that you say upon many things. And it doesn't use the plural matzos. And that's part of really the Haggadah. You're talking about the Shibud, you're talking about the challenges. That's part of the reason why you have half a matzah there. Because it wasn't, you were. Jewish people suffered so much, they weren't complete. So according to the Gra, you can't have two matzahs. Because two matzahs would be a shalem. And this, the Haggadah is supposed to be on matzah, on the lachem sha'onim lov dvarim harbe, that it should be broken. So specifically the Gra says, it's better to have one and a half matzahs, where it's not a full shalem, it's not your two lachem mishnas you might have the rest of the year, and specifically two matzahs, not your three. Okay, so that's maybe why the Gra has two, while others have three. But what about these other things? First of all, no one has salt water on their kara besides the Ramah. So that, stam, is debatable. You know, is that really an item unto itself? Or is it really just for the karpas? So the Ramah brought it as an item unto itself there. Others, no, that's the karpas needs that, but it's not its own item.
You said about a Moses also.
Oh, right? That could be, right, really they debate also, why do you need two Marahs in the Arizal? So some want to say it's the Marah for Achilas Marah and also for Hillel, for Korach, so you have two separate ones. Others say that's all the same, so you don't have to have two. But I found a very interesting step which might explain two aspects of the Gra. When do you bring the Kara there? So the Pasha, the most common minhag, which I assume most people have, is from the beginning of the Seder, right? Your Seder table is set and your Kara is there. The Gra has a minhag that you only bring the Kara there before Magid. It's not on the table before, by Kiddush, by the beginning of the Seder. You bring the Kara according to the Gra by Magid. Which makes some sense, because the Kara is going to be sort of your visual aid when you're giving over about Yetzias Mitzrayim. So here's my visual aid. Right? Great for the Rebbe in the classroom. Right? Who needs smart boards? We have a Kara here. It's going to show us everything. So this Kara you bring by Magid. That easily explains why there's no Karpas on the Kara according to the Gra. Because it happened already. You're only using the Kara post Karpas. Oh, that also explains beautifully the two matzahs. Because according to the Gra, you already did yachatz. You already split the matzahs. So now you have the lachem shalom of Dvarim Harbe. You have your broken matzah. So now that with another matzah, you put over there with your kara. Very interesting idea. So it comes out, we have three different versions of how to set up a Seder plate. The Ramah, the Gra, the Arizal. They have different amounts of objects, items on your Seder plate. Different orders. There's reasonings behind the order. There's reasonings why some items are on, some items are off. And with the last thing we just explained, with the Gra, when you put the Seder plate on, could also explain what's there. If you're waiting to put the Seder plate on right before Magid, it's already bypassed Karpas. It's not going to be in your Seder plate. It's also a time when I already did Yachatz. So now I broke my matzahs. So now I put the matzah, the 1.5 matzahs on there, and now I start off with 3. That, I believe, explains some different minhagim with the Kara. Yes?
So according to the Gra, this isn't the problem, but according to the others, have the Kara on the table when they're making Kiddush. Normally we cover the matzah when we make Kiddush because we have one mitzvah. We don't want to embarrass it while we're doing the other mitzvah. But the Kara, we have other mitzvahs there and we don't cover it up even though we're making Kiddush.
Interesting.
According to the Gra, you don't have that issue because it's not there.
Interesting question. Sounds like you've been bothered by this question at Pasadarim. Right? I like that. You're asking, why is it able, you know, we cover over the matzah or the challah the whole year, because I'm sort of, right, I'm bypassing one mitzvah for the other.
There are some people that say every time you do make any bracha on the kosher, so you should cover the actual kara, the top of the kara itself.
Really?
The matzahs are, but it's brought down a kosher to actually cover the top itself.
So there you have, interesting, right? That so much supports your question, right? That really any mitzvah, if you're making kiddush on that and you're bypassing another mitzvah, so the same way we cover our challahs or matzah on Pesach, so who identifies should cover the other ones. But according to the Gra, at least for the first Kiddush, you're saved because it's not on the table. You only bring the Kara to the table after matzahs. Very interesting. Couple other points I'll just quickly add with the Kara. The Mechaber's language was Me'ivin lefnei Baal Habayis. You bring in front of the Baal Habayis. So the Mishabur over there, it's on your sheets, in Yud Zayin, says that you only have to have one Seder plate on the table. Now, this is important, you know, different than Hagen, and especially sometimes, you know, depending on the size of the crowd and the size of your table, not necessarily so much room. Oh, so the Mishnah Berurah writes, you only ideally need one kara, one Seder plate for the Baal Bayis, a person leading the Seder. There, he has a Seder plate. Now, just like many other aspects of the Seder, there are different minhagim. There are many families that have the minhag to have multiple Seder plates. You want to blame it on the Hasidim? I blame it on someone's mother. The kid felt left out, so they made a Seder plate. You have to know how these minhagim evolve. You know, it was the Hasidish Rebbe, it was the mother. That's where it started.
The
Omen Art Projects. It's the Moro or the Mom or the Mother. One of the two.
If you only have one, then the Raman, the Gra, are probably the same. It's just they sat on the opposite sides of the table because the grandparents were there or the fathers were there.
I don't know about that. But, right? If you have multiple ones, maybe you go the other way. If you have multiple ones, you could try out. Who wants the Arizal one tonight? Who wants the Grow one? But I don't know. That's, you know, that looks strange.
Cover all opinions,
different ones. Right? That's what you sometimes have these guys, right? They like shaking tons of luv and the srogims. Right? They'll have, like, you know, a set of three they'll shake. So you have one guy. I'll make money on this one. I'll sell you a three kara package. Right? You want the most hider Seder plates. I'll give you three different versions. And nowadays, they're even smarter about these things. Right? You know the famous thing. You could buy a bedikas chametz set. Yeah. Right? The spoon of this, and 10 pieces of bread. Wrapped in whatever. So what I would do is I'll sell you a set of three Seder plates, Gra, Raman, Arizal, plus I'll have self-made all the different things. Just put them there. You know, just unwrap it and it's right there. So that's one additional halacha. The other thing, your Zro and your Be'a, what do you do with them after the Seder? So it's very important. The Mefarshim say that you should not burn it with next year's chametz. Is that being these items are used in the Seder plate, your Halakha Seder plate, which is part of the mitzvah of Pesach. So therefore, you shouldn't just throw in the garbage. That would be a Bizoy mitzvah. You could eat the egg even the night of the Seder, which also means you have to have a new egg the next night. But yeah, 100% you could eat the egg the night of the Seder. Many people do. However, with the Zeruah, the shank bone, that one cannot eat the night of the Seder, being the fact that it was roasted, so it was Zecher, the Karban Pesach, and that one can't eat. But the next day, as long as it's not the night of Pesach, the next day one could eat it.
Next day you could eat.
During the day. Just not at night, one can't eat it then.
Right? Most people aren't doing that.
Yeah.
Most people just get rid of it.
Yeah.
Okay. But for those who are interested in eating it, I'll tell your wife to make it nicely. Yeah, put some barbecue sauce on it, I don't know. But, one could eat the Zeruah, just not that day, the next day. Okay, so those are basic halachas I think we covered about the Seder plate. Next aspect. Next minhag. So I want to talk about wearing a kittel. Wearing a kittel is also a pretty common minhag. I have to be careful when my Sephardim walk out. But I said Sephardi before, you know. Most have Hasidic lineage. He said, what do you mean? Sephardim? No, okay, you don't. But in the Ashkenazi world, I do believe most people do wear kittels. But even this, there are different minhagim. There are some families which only the person leading the Seder wears the kittel. You know, my wife's father's family, that's the minhag. My great uncle told me that in Mishpacha, that was also the minhag, the older person leading the Seder, he's the one who wears the kittel, but not everybody else. Right? This in some ways is in line with the Seder plate, whether Mishnah Berurah writes, really only the Baal Bayis, only one person needs to have a Seder plate. So you don't need necessarily everyone to wear a kittel, but again, there are minhagim in many families that all married males wear a kittel, not just the person leading the Seder, but everybody. I remember when I got married, it was quite confusing. We had the Siddurim on the Grumblat side, so they're only the person leading the Seder wore a kettle. So I said, okay, so then what do I do? If my family minhag is to wear one, this. My mom was like, do what you want. Sometimes that's the hardest answer. Do what I want, though. I don't know what I do. Okay. There also are, interestingly, minhagim, let's say, unfortunately, a person's an avelos. So some people have the minhag that an avel does not wear a kittel at the Seder. Some say yes, even an avel wears a kittel at the Seder. There also are different minhagim with the chasen in Shana Rishona. Right, you just got married, you got a wedding in before Pesach. So do you wear a kittel at the Seder? Some have the minhag, yeah. But others say Shana Rishona not. Oh, that's a good idea. You're right. Oh, right. So, why is it that we have these? What are these minhagim based on? Sounds funny. Do you wear a kittel? Not wear a kittel. Some chassanim wear kittels. Some chassanim don't wear kittels. Right? It's not based on whether they got it yet from the store. Right, it's not based on usually by the chuppah they're wearing. You know, the wine is white, so it doesn't really make a bad stain.
They don't come down to halachas, so it leaves room for tradition.
Okay, but what's those traditions based on? Good point.
Is this only discussing when the chassan is there in front of someone else, like a parent who's leading the seder, or is it even if he's by himself?
Interesting. Interesting. I'll bring up this point. I didn't see this discussed by a chassan, but they do discuss it by an avol. By an avol, it's discussed perhaps if he's in a seder with multiple people, if he doesn't wear his kittel, why isn't that a problem of ein avelos b'moed? One can't outwardly show avelos on really Shabbos or Yontif. So there are those that say if an avol's in a Seder with other people, then Shmuel Kamenetsky passes this way, Hidavka should wear his kittel. There are different minhagim, but he says you should lean inside of wearing a kittel, because this way you're preventing an issue of ein avelos b'moed. If you be sitting by yourself, like your case, you're sitting by yourself in your own Seder, and it's not apparent that point, you know, to others as much as everyone else is sitting there with a kittel, you're not, fine. But if you're there with others, there are those who say that you dafka should wear a kittel. But by a chassan, I didn't see such a distinction.
But on Yom Kippur, the avel is not wearing a kittel.
So also, over there also, there is debate about this. I believe this point will come up. I don't want to get involved. There's a whole steer in the Mishnah Berurah, which way he paskins. And it seems like steer is between Pesach and Yom Kippur with avelos and kittels. So it's confusing halacha. So there's a taz I actually put in the back of the sheets. What's the reasoning, the bottom of the page, what's the reasoning for wearing a kittel? So the taz writes, Yisha kasvu shenagel lovosh begadim levenim v'nikiyam yom kippur. You wear these white begadim yom kippur. Dugamas Malchi Ashares, the Chay Nogim Nishal Kittel, Shulav Vanaki. Part of the reason he wear the white kittel is to be pure, especially in Yom Kippur. Gamu a Beged Mason. This is also, unfortunately, the Beged that we bury people with. Vaideze Leva Adam Nichna Vanishbar. And through that, a person's heart is subjugated and broken. Really means that. to take down some degree of haughtiness. The Taz explains, we're afraid Pesach, the Seder, listen to this idea, should be such a happy time. A person sitting there, sometimes he has a schus to be there with lots of family. He's sitting there so happy and exalted. This is the night of all nights, that Hashem took us out on the Mitzrayim and we became a Jewish nation. And you appreciate all what that freedom means to be a Jew. And you're just so happy. Really, the night of Pesach should bring a person to such simcha that there's a fear you're in such a high, not just from the four cups, four cases, right, of wine. You're in such a high from the simcha of the night of the Seder that you might go too far with that simcha. So to counterbalance it, that's why you put on the kittel. The purpose of the kittel is to be machnia, to subjugate, to slow down a person's happiness gauge. Because when a person's too happy and too haughty, he could do averus. So to slow it down, that's why the Taz says you should put in the kittel. Remember, we're only here for a certain amount of time. This is what we're going to be buried in. And that's why one wears a kittel on Pesach. Amazing idea.
What about a
chasen? So this is the general reason why one would wear a kittel. So the Mefarshim point out, this explains to us the minhagim of both an avol and a chasen. By an avol, unfortunately, he's already living with a lev nishpar v'nichna. It's the year of avelos. Those feelings, even if, you know, it could be 11 months ago, but those feelings are still somewhat there, and one does not need to wear the kittel to bring that out. He already has it. And in contrast, a chasan, there's, in Shana Rishonah, there's a specific mitzvah, v'samachta in ishtacha, you should be misameach with one's wife, and one shouldn't be in a state of sadness or this lev nishpar v'nichna. And therefore one does not put on the kittel. Amazing idea. The way our chazal, our poskim, view a simple object. You put in the kittel, you lace it up, you button it up. What's the big deal? But if you understand what a kittel represents, it represents, you know, this wouldn't be buried in. Right? Imagine you have a non-firm person by your Seder. And they see a kittel for the first time in their lives. What is this? You have to explain it to them. So it's nice to say, oh, this looks angelic. So nice. Yeah, we wear it twice a year, Yom Kippur. And this, that's one reason for a kittel. But the other reason is lev nishpa v'nichna. This one can be buried in. Oh.
It is also worn in a very holy moment.
Right, right.
And a holy moment should have great reverence about Kodesh Baruch Hu.
Yeah, I think that's part of the first reason. That one wears it, you know, to look like a malach and lay naki, and yeah, the holy moment of Yom Kippur, the holy moment of the Seder. But this other reason, I'll say maybe a more musardik reason,
yeah,
but it's a taz. The reasoning is a person's heart shouldn't be too haughty, and therefore a regular person needs that. A novel doesn't need that. And a chasan shouldn't have that. And that explains the difference in the minhagim.
Is a person buried actually in their own kittel, the one that they wear at Pesach and Yom Kippur?
It should be.
I believe so.
It's around.
Yeah. Yeah.
Generally not.
But the one that stays around.
Yeah. I mean, that, I mean, they don't have time to get it.
I'm saying by the part of it, I mean, there's just a lot of kittels just there that
they're used. They have the package set waiting.
It's ideal though.
But for those that know better, right, they know they have the.
I assume if they're able to get it, they'll use it.
If they know better than they do.
On Pesach, the whole night is like marked by this contrast of slavery and freedom, so it still seems to have both as well.
It's a fascinating point. You're right. Yes. You know, Lev Nishpar V'nitka fits perfectly also with our broken matzah. And, right, our shibud, like our of what we felt like when we're going through surviving as slaves. But at the same time, it also this angelic, you're like a malach. Yeah, it really represents both sides too.
It's usually the person leading the Seder has a lot of responsibilities. He's usually not so elated. So like the minhag where only he wears a kiddush, but everyone else.
It's a good question. I'm not sure this really explains that. Right? I think it's a good point. That really, seemingly, I guess everyone should need it, or you're trying to argue maybe everyone else needs it except the guy leading the Seder. It's not possible. Yeah. But this definitely does help explain the Avol and Chasson. One other area I wanted to get to, and as I said, there are tons and tons of minhagim. Really, I'm whetting your appetite with elements really leading up to the Seder. I'm touching upon the Seder, but really, we're just, you know, scratching the surface. It's
next,
so
next week.
We just might. But we're just scratching the surface of the so many different minhagim. But I think these are all symbolic things you see, the Seder plate, the kittel. Another area, and I think the yisod behind this is something I want to share. If you look at the bottom of your first sheet, the Shulchan Aruch Siman Tav Ayin Beis writes the following. Mitzvah l'chalek l'tinokos klois v'agozim k'dei shi'iru shinoi v'yishalu. There's a mitzvah to give out these nuts, these candies to a kid in order they should see and ask. It's my first observation. For those who give out candies to your kids all year round, besides the dentist sitting here, right? I'm not sure that's prescribed by the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch seems to be on Pesach night. That's a special thing that they're getting candies, not that they get three times a day for snack in school.
Juice right?
Secondly, he says it's a mitzvah to give out these candies in order that like, the kid are like, ooh, I'm getting candy, what's that for? Not like the kid's list of demands, you know. I expect, you know, five candies for this and that. What's the reasoning behind this, right? As Mechaber says, because we want them to ask, they want to see something different. They'll see something different happening, they'll ask questions, what's different? And you're starting explaining what tonight's Pesach. It's part of to instigate kids to ask questions. I found fascinating, you know, probably one of the most published svarim that exist in our wonderful library of svarim are Haggadahs. There are so many Haggadahs. I remember my father showing me his father's Haggadah, my namesake, you know, spent, you know, his first paycheck to buy some nice, beautifully illustrated Haggadah, you know, 80 years ago. But there are so many Haggadahs. Nowadays, there are so many Haggadahs which share with us the inner workings. What was it to have a Seder by Rav Moshe? What did Rav Moshe do at the Seder? What did Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky do at the Seder? And in both, the Haggadahs of both of those Gedolim, it says they did not give out candies or nuts to the kids. And Rav Moshe and Rabbi Yaakov were two of the most warmest people you ever would have met. Why didn't they give it out? Or the more so, look at the Lashon. It's Machaber. Shulchan Aruch says you should do this. Really, it's based on the Gemara. How did he not listen to what the Gemara said? The Shulchan Aruch said. It says mitzvah. And for you to tell me mitzvah is lav dafka, that's quite dochik. If you look like in Tezvav, the Machaber writes, Tinoka shegil achinach, mitzvah litin l'chol echa kosu l'fanav. Right? If a kid's already of age, of chinuch, then you should give him his own cup, his own kos. Right? Kosos and karas are two different things. A kid could have only one kar on the whole table, but once a kid reaches the age of chinuch, he should have his own kos. It's separate, it's different. So the Mishaburu writes over there, Avol eno ma'akev. It's not ma'akev. It might use the lashon of mitzvah, but Mishaburu qualifies, you don't have to do that. They ain't no Mishnah Berurah over here saying mitzvah is avo ena ma'akev. Doesn't write that. So how is it that these gedolim seemingly ignored this halacha? So I found that Shmuel Kamenetsky explains a long piece in the back of your sheets. But he explains that with some of these minhagim, These are all minhagim. The purpose of this minhag is to excite the kids to ask questions. That's the reasoning behind it. So if you know the kids are going to ask questions anyway, one doesn't need to do this. You have to know the reasoning behind the minhag. There might be a minhag dating back to the Gemara. It's clear in Shulchan Aruch. But you have to know, is that minhag still applicable or not? And Rav Moshe and Rav Yaakov, seemingly dating back even to their parents, they understood this minhag is not needed to do. This is why, I think this illustrates it quite well, especially when it comes to the Seder, you can't just read the book. You can't just read the Shulchan Aruch and see, look, if you read Shulchan Aruch, I should be giving out candies and nuts. Did your father do that? Did Rav Moshe do that? Did Yaakov do that? It depends. If you understand the reasoning behind some of these things, especially with the kids, it's to engage them in the Seder. You know, I know from my wife's family, you know, different minhagim, you know, pick silly things, small things. You know, just the tunes of what you use to sing this song. That has meaning too. That's something which, this is the way we sang it, it's a special thing in the family. Everyone gets riled up when they sing it like this. In my family, we have a special thing. Right? In Kiddush, before you drink the second cup of wine, there's a whole big lashon you use there after the first two paragraphs of Hallel. And then it talks about our, you know, Bez Hashem, we look forward to the day we have our Beis HaMikdash back, and we'll bring our korbanos, and it would be Zurich the Dumb, Al Kir Mizbachacha L'Ratzo. It evolved over the years somehow, that minhag. Minhagim are things which are unique to families. It's something which is special, which stands out. You know, different, you know, the question that kids ask the night after the Seder shouldn't be just be a comparison. What time did you finish your Seder? What time did I finish your Seder? Right? It shouldn't just be a race of, you know, just like Rosh Hashanah davening. What time did you finish or did this? No, it should have meaning. Just like a chazan in Rosh Hashanah, it's meaningful, the tunes used for those davenings. It's things people remember for the rest of their lives. I can always hear in my head the davening, the nusach from the chazanim I grew up with. So too, a Pesach Seder is something which the way the minhagim, how the Seder plate looks, who's wearing a kittel, what's given out to the kids, what do you sing, all these different nuances of how one leads a Seder, as Bez Hashem, has an impact for everyone there that could last for generations. Thank you very much for listening. Have a wonderful, wonderful week.